now. It is just coming up to 11:50 and I'm joined for this month's book club as ever by Sylvia Kent, who is a journalist and writer and much, much more as well. And our guest is journalist, writer, editor and PR consultant Barbara Field Holmes, who will be joining us a little bit later. So are you there, Sylvia?
I am.
A very good morning to you. What are Billericay readers reading at the moment? Are there any good holiday reads that you lot can recommend for us?
Yes. Well, first of all, lots happening this summer. We're meeting with lots and lots of writers at the moment. I finished the Margaret Atwood book. Great thick job called The Testaments.
Yep.
And I gave a short review to my fellow members. It's worth reading, but a bit scary.
Oh, what's the outline of the book?
Following the Handmaid's Tale.
Oh, right. Okay. It's that's the film, wasn't it? Or the TV series, The Handmaid's Tale.
Well, I didn't see the film. But it took me days to read this very thick book, about 500-600 pages.
Yeah.
But also we're reading at Billericay The Dissolution by C.J. Sansom, and another book, Things Fall Apart, like me at the moment, by Chinua Achebe and Linda Butcher. Gave a superb review of that book. Brentwood Writers' Circle is growing. We've got new members and lots of exciting projects coming up. We do have competitions through the year, which a lot of new writers like to enter. And so anyone interested in writing, come along to Bardswell Social Club in Weald Road. Usually the first Saturday afternoon in the month, but all details are on the web at brentwoodwriterscircle.com.
And what's been happening in the world of the Society of Women Writers and Journalists?
Well, you're going to hear more about that. I'm going to leave that to our lovely Barbara, who will be telling you about our conference that's coming up at Brunel University on Friday the 16th of September. Everyone can come, members, but also people that who just like to meet Benjamin Zephaniah, one of the most famous poets at the moment in the UK.
Mm-hmm.
And she'll tell you a little bit about that. But there's lots and lots going on in Brentwood and Billericay, and as I say, we welcome people to our readers, our writers groups, and certainly in London at the Society of Women Writers and Journalists.
And you've also got a blog as well, haven't you?
I have. I don't know what people see in it, quite frankly, but they do.
Mm.
And it's a useful thing to do for writers to start a blog. And just put in things that you're reading, you're writing, people you meet. And it's surprising the invitations you get by people taking an interest in what you do.
Mm. Well, what is it? To give us the details, it's Blogspot, isn't it? Sylvia Kent, if you type that in, you'll find Blogspot very easily.
Reading and writing.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it's my 17th year.
17th, wow.
Yeah.
So
it's quite surprising how people stick with you and want to know a bit more about what we do.
Yeah.
In Essex, mainly Essex.
We do have to excuse us because we're on Zoom. There is a tiny little bit of a delay today. So as Sylvia's talking, she's just hearing me. So there's a slight delay on the Zoom today. So I do apologise if we're cutting into each other's conversation. So every month, Sylvia does 60 Seconds of History, which she manages to do Fantastically. And we've covered, well, we haven't covered, Sylvia has covered lots and lots of subjects. So what are you going to be talking about with your 60 seconds of history today?
Well, I'm hoping I won't go over the 60-second mark that I have recently. I thought I'd talk about the railway. What do you think?
Yeah, and is that Brent from Brentwood Station?
Yeah.
Yep. Yes. That's great. Yeah, okay. Whenever you're ready.
Okay, here we go. Brentwood was a quiet little town once a hamlet, until the railway arrived from London in July 1840. The population increased fourfold in a very short time. Hundreds of navvies were drafted into the area to dig a deep cutting 100 feet in a fold in the hill south of the town. But they encountered terrible problems in the work because of unexpected spring streams and sandy conditions, making the sides slip in. The cutting itself and two bridges, the Three Arch Bridge and the Seven Arch Bridge, were considered amazing engineering achievements, and the thousands of tons of spoil from the cutting created the famous tips on Shenfield Common. We lived alongside the railway in Hartford Road for 30 years and loved the wildness of the embankment, where our earlier house owners kept bees. And we have some wonderful memories of the area.
Community radio for Brentwood and Billericay. This is Phoenix FM.
It is the book club, and I'm joined by journalist, writer and editor and PR consultant, Barbara Field-Holmes. So it's lovely to speak to you, Barbara.
Yes, hello. Lovely to speak to you too.
Now, you've got such a wonderful CV. I've read through it. You've done so much in your career. So let's start really at the beginning. How did you become interested in writing?
From quite a young age, I was very much into books. I had a nickname of the bookworm when I was in junior school. And that was mainly my mother's encouragement. She always used to buy us a book for a birthday or Christmas, all me and my siblings, and she always encouraged us to read. Some of us took to it and some of us didn't, and I loved it.
And did you have any favourite authors growing up?
Not really. One of my favourite, she used to buy me quite a lot of Jane Austen books, so I read my way through all of those. And then I loved a story called Rebecca. But one of my favourites when I was a bit younger than that was The Secret Garden.
Yeah.
I don't know if you're familiar with it. And I read that several times under the blankets in bed.
Yeah.
Oh, with a torch.
Oh, beautiful. Your first writing job when you left school, where were you working then?
My first writing job was a local newspaper, small local newspaper called The News Shop. And it was a very small staff. And I was taken on as a trainee reporter, but very quickly worked my way up the scale. And within 3 years, found myself editing it for a while because the editor fell out with the boss and left suddenly.
Yeah.
And I just got asked, well, do you think you can do this? I said, well, I'll give it a good try. And I did it then for another year.
And with being an editor, you're in charge of every single story, the way that it's laid out in magazines or the papers. So it's all your responsibility.
That's right.
Wow. And it's a lot of pressure.
It was I felt quite privileged at such a young age to be given that responsibility.
Yeah.
But the money wasn't very good, and I always had ambitions of working on a magazine.
Now, you also, with your writing, we'll talk about a little bit more about your magazine and supplements you've worked on as well. You've been lucky enough with your writing to travel around the world.
Oh, yes.
So what has been some of the highlights for you being a journalist and travelling? And the stories?
Oh, it was all when I was with the trade press, and it was in the days, sort of 80s and 90s, when most of the manufacturers had nice big fat marketing budgets. And they used to take us on, I used to go on dealer trips, on factory tours, go to exhibitions. So I've been all over the place from several different parts of the United States, including bits of Canada. South Africa. I went there a couple of times on business, but also on pleasure because I've got a cousin who lives there. And that's where I fell in love with the elephants, which is why I've got elephants on my company logo. And then I've also done Hong Kong, Beijing for an exhibition, and all different parts of Europe. So I really can't complain. I mean, a lot of people, when I told them what I did and what I was on a heating and plumbing magazine, they would wrinkle their noses up and say, oh, that sounds boring. But it was far from boring. It was really, really good.
Yeah, I was going to say you're a founding member of Women in Plumbing and Heating Group.
Yes, that's right.
So how did that actually come about?
Well, as part of one of the heating books, I firmly believe in getting involved in all the trade and professional bodies of the industry you're working in, which I did. And I got very much involved in what was then known as the Institute of Plumbing, is now the Chartered Institute of Plumbing and Heating Engineering. And I was, when I first went, I was the only female journalist that used to go. And so I used to attend lots of meetings and was always introduced as lady and gentleman, which was always made me laugh.
Yeah.
But something I noticed over the years was that very few women were recognised for their part in the industry. And even when it came down to a straightforward independent plumber, the person that was key to his success was the wife or woman behind him who was helping him run the office, taking his phone calls, assisting him basically so that he could go out and do his job. And so I wanted to introduce a competition to allow women to come to conference, and that was very successful. And that led on to, well, let's start recognising the growing number of female plumbers and installers as well, because there are a lot of women in the actually working in the industry who are not getting the recognition that they deserved. And that's how that came about.
Wow.
Because it's so different today.
Yeah. And actually to do it back then must have been a lot of challenges.
Oh, there was, because as a woman, the initial, and I was only in my sort of mid late 20s at the time, and so the immediate reaction from a lot of the male installers and engineers was, well, what do you know? You're just a girl. And so you really had to work hard to prove yourself. And obviously I did, because I ended up being very well respected throughout the industry, which was lovely.
Now, you are the Society of Women Writers and Journalists, which I know that Sylvia is always talking about, based in London.
Yes.
You're a fellow member of the Society. And are you editor of their in-house magazine and weekly news bulletin?
Yes.
And you were chairman for 4 years as well.
I was, yes.
And vice president as well?
I was vice president for a year while I was learning the role from a lady called Val Dunwell, who taught me an enormous amount. And then I took over as chair. It's normally only a 2 year sort of post, but I did offer to do a third year because there was nobody ready to come up and take over from me. And then I ended up doing a fourth year because again, we had nobody that really wanted a volunteer to do the work. But 4 years was just a little bit too much, because you do need fresh eyes on something like that every so often.
Now, the Society of Women Writers and Journalists has been going for a very, very long time. And what was the history? Why was it founded?
It was founded by Joseph Snell Wood. And he, it's a bit like me with recognising that women should have a voice in the plumbing industry. He recognised there were a lot of very talented female writers. This was back in the 1894, I think it was. And they weren't, it was illegal, I think, almost, for a woman to write under her own name. And a lot of them were writing under male pseudonyms. And he wanted them to get the recognition they deserved. So he set up the Society, and he actually took on women writers on his newspapers. And that was how it all started off.
Now, what's, hopefully I'll say this right, what's Scriptura?
Scriptura, yes, that's correct. It's a kind of a publishing assistance. It's not actually self-publishing. We vet and I've just taken that over from Mary Renston, who set it all up. We assist our members in getting published. So the manuscript would come in, I would vet it first, then I would pass it out to a minimum of two readers, so they would read it and say whether they thought it was publishable. And then if one of them rejects it, then it goes to a third person, because it must have at least two people say that it is has got potential there for being published.
Yeah.
And then we go through the same process that a publishing house would. You know, we edit it, we correct it where it needs it, or we pass it back to the author to be corrected or to change this or change that. And we work together. I work together with the author until it's ready to finally go to press.
Now, you're the owner director of Big In Words Limited. Tell us about the work you do there.
Right. Well, I'm not doing a great deal on it at the moment. I set it up in 2009. I came out of the magazine world 2006, and that was to adopt my son, who was 9 at the time. He'd come from a bad background and he would need a lot of my attention.
Yeah.
And I just felt I couldn't devote the right attention to him if I was still in the magazine world, traveling all over the world. So it was a big career change for me. Shortly after that, we felt my husband decided to retire and be the person, the parent at home. And I went back to work and set up Big In Words. I've always loved elephants and I wanted to have a name that would stand out and be noticed.
Yeah.
And because at the time I was living in Biggin Hill, and I noticed there were a lot of local companies called Big In Tiles, Big In This, Big In That, I thought, well, that maybe that's where the name comes from, Big In Words. And that's how it all started. And I carried on working for a lot of the manufacturers and clients that I knew from my magazine days. My biggest one was Myra Showers, because I'd been working for them previously. And so I just carried on for quite a few years, sort of 10 years or so, working for a lot of construction industry companies doing their PR.
Now, you do PR as well for the Chartwell Cancer Trust.
I don't now, since I've moved away.
Right.
I mean, that came to an end, sadly, when in the first lockdown.
Right.
Because when we entered the first lockdown, of course, a lot of their donations came from events and functions, fundraising events. And, of course, all those had to be cancelled overnight. And so a lot of their income dropped dramatically overnight.
Yeah.
And they couldn't give me any work anymore. So I still carried on doing a bit of freelance, volunteering work for them, doing a bit of Twitter and stuff. But that gradually dwindled as their own staff were able to take that role on for me. What I'm doing at the moment is the company is still there. I'm reorganising it a little bit, moving slightly away from the PR and getting more into publishing,
yes,
which is an area that I've always been quite interested in. And the scriptura is giving me the sort of background and learning ground, if you like, for getting into publishing.
And just to mention, there is a conference coming up, isn't there, for the Society of Women Writers and Journalists?
Yes, there is.
And what's going to be going on during the conference?
There's going to be various talks by well-known writers, agents, people like Benjamin Zephaniah is going to be there. Now I should have had the list in front of me to rattle them off to you. But I'm putting out another newsletter shortly to give information about all the latest speakers that are coming on board. But it will be a mixture of speakers, workshops, etc., and then coffee breaks, lunch break, etc.
And with your... Go ahead.
Okay, so it should be a really interesting day.
And with your writing, your creative writing, are you going to be releasing or have you released a book, or are you going to be writing fiction or anything like that? Is that something that you might do?
Yes, I'm very keen to do that, which is why I'm scaling my business right down now.
Yeah.
I want to have a go at fiction, but I also want to try and write a story based done as a fiction story, but based on my experiences of adoption, because there were very many ups and downs, things that could have been avoided or could have been prevented. And I just think it would make an interesting story, and also get it out there that, you know, what's actually involved in adoption, because I don't think a lot of people have a clue what is, you know, what you have to go through to be an adopter. You have to be, you are so vetted, you know, it's untrue. Every aspect of your life is unpicked and displayed to social services. You know, and sometimes you end up thinking, well, it's a pity that all parents don't go through that same learning process before they have children.